By the end of the year, Australia will have a choice of new COVID-19 vaccines and the likelihood of mixing and matching them.
We think there is no reason why you can't mix and match vaccines. The trial data is not out yet. There's some trials being done in the UK looking at AstraZeneca first dose and Pfizer or Moderna second dose. There's no good scientific reason why you can't boost with one and then have another.
That's Australia's Health Department Secretary Brendan Murphy speaking earlier. He was speaking after the federal government today announced it had reached a deal with Moderna to buy these 25 million doses of its new technology mRNA vaccine. It's also in discussions with Moderna to locally manufacture the vaccine. Jane Holton is the chair of the Coalition of Epidemic Preparedness, and she's our guest. Jane Holton, welcome.
Hi, PK. How are you?
Good. So we're getting 10 million doses of Moderna by the end of the year, but the TGA hasn't actually approved it. So what things is the TGA needing to look at before it gives it the thumbs up, and how long will that take?
So, of course, every medicine or vaccine, or for that matter, device, medical device that gets used in Australia has to go through a rigorous process of making sure that it's safe to use. Now, in this particular case, what will happen is there will be an application made with a lot of data, PK, which actually shows how it went in trials. And of course, now it's being used elsewhere around the world, which means you can consider things like adverse events, what's the best, for example, dosing schedule, and all that data will be given to the TGA. Now, I don't think they're going to have to spend a long, long time on this, but they will want, and rightly, in my view, to confirm that the data confirms what we think we all know, which is this is highly efficacious and will be good to be added to our vaccine arsenal to prevent COVID-19.
Presumably an agreement like this and also a deal to manufacture the mRNA vaccine locally didn't happen overnight. So why wasn't it mentioned in Tuesday's budget?
Well, I think with all of these deals, Patricia, until you've actually got a signed deal, you haven't got a deal. And so, I mean, you never want to, I suppose, take a risk by saying we're in discussion or we're thinking about or we're working on. So I think actually it's good that we now actually have a deal. And the fact that we've got a deal, which gives us not just access to some vaccine later on this year, but also, as I think your grab showed, some vaccine for next year, particularly as variants come through, and we probably will want to boost, as in people will probably need another shot. That's not confirmed yet, but we suspect that they will.
Do we know how much money the government has allocated for this? We know the government has allocated, what, nearly $10 billion in a contingency plan, but how much of that amount do you think will be given over to this project?
Well, I think we'd be speculating, Patricia. They haven't told us exactly what that is, and I wouldn't want to add to that speculation. I think we do know that mRNA vaccines are more expensive than some of the older technologies. This is very, very new technology. It's great technology, but it isn't cheap to make. So I think we'll be looking to the government to tell us about that in due course.
We know a CSL subsidiary will tender for the local manufacture. Also, international biotech giant BioSina and the University of Adelaide have also floated plans about mRNA manufacturing capability. So do we know how the government will make its choice? Will it ultimately come down to dollars, or how fast the facility will be up and running?
Well, I'm sure once those documents are in the public arena, we can make a judgment. But I think there's a couple of things you'd be thinking about here, Patricia. Firstly, what you want to be confident about is that whomever is going to undertake this work actually is able to deliver on it. You'd also want to be confident that this is not just something that'll be there for 1 or 2 years. Obviously, things like vaccines are things you need to make on an ongoing basis. So we want enduring technology transfer, and we want someone coming into our country, great jobs, fantastic technology, and we're really good at this health science work and the health science research. So what we want to see is something that's robust, that it continues, and obviously that will require a partner who is an expert. But I think it's particularly good, Patricia, already we've got a number of people saying we think we can do that, which actually means there'll be some choice. And I think that's the position that would be best for all of us, that we can choose among some good applications and actually choose the best.
All this talk about more of the mRNA vaccines like Moderna and Pfizer being made available later this year, I mean, they've really been the dominant conversations. Do we know whether it's affecting the take-up rates with the AstraZeneca vaccine?
Well, we don't, but I think there's a couple of things to remind everybody of. We can't actually vaccinate 20 million people in the last couple of months of this year. It is not actually technically possible. And the good news is that we've nearly vaccinated now across the country 3 million people. I don't think we'll quite get to 3 million this week. My suspicion is we'll be just short of that number, but certainly by early next week, we'll have vaccinated 3 million people. And I don't know about you, Patricia, but I've been and had my first shot of AstraZeneca, and I can report it was completely painless. The nurse who did mine was amazing. A little bit of a sore arm and then a tiny bit of a flu symptom the next day, but all fine. And so we need actually to get people rolled through to get their AstraZeneca or their Pfizer, if they're under the age of 50, between now and Christmas, because if we don't, we'll be going into next year with our population pretty much unprotected. And yes, there will be some Moderna available at the end of the year for the under 50s age group. I think they've announced that today. And next year, available to boost if and when we think we will need that for new variants. But this year, we need to get on and do the Pfizer and the AstraZeneca. So a bit early to tell, I think, whether people now think that that would be better. But certainly my advice, Patricia, is go out and get your vaccine as soon as you can get an appointment organised.
Do you think it's time Otagi reviewed the arbitrary age cutoff of 50 for the AstraZeneca jab?
Well, look, I'm sure that's something they've got under regular review. I mean, we've discussed in the past, haven't we, that in the UK, the age cutoff is 30. They obviously were taking a very cautious, a prudent approach in their view. And I am hoping that they continue to review that data on a regular basis, because we're always getting updates on these matters. And obviously, you want to make sure that the advice is as current as it can be.
Now, Jane Holton, anytime the question of a second national quarantine facility comes up, the Prime Minister says the government followed your advice and established the Howard Springs facility. Is it a time you recommended or supported at least a second national quarantine facility, given the latest hotel quarantine transmission that we've seen just this week in South Australia?
Well, of course, I'm not doing another review at the moment, Patricia, but look, it is absolutely the case. If there was a good proposal available to actually establish another facility of that kind, and we think that we're going to get enough use out of it, given how long we suspect that we're going to be quarantining people coming in from offshore. And sadly, if we look around the world, that may be the case for a little while yet. Well, clearly, it would be sensible to think about that as an option. Now, I know that there have been a number of proposals put forward. I haven't seen those in detail, but I do think, I understand actually, that the Victorian proposal that's been put forward is well thought out. And if it were possible to deliver some quarantine services in addition to the hotels, because I think, Patricia, we never will be able to deliver everything in a Howard Springs-like context, but if it were possible to supplement with another centre, I think that would be all to the good, yes.
One additional quarantine facility, I know Victoria is obviously, as you say, well advanced and the government's looking at it very favourably, all of that's going on. Is one extra enough, or would you need even another one on top of that?
Well, I think it all comes down to what proposals can be brought forward. We've discussed in the past the things that would make these sorts of centres viable. Number one, they do need to be close to an airport. You don't want to be busing people long distances. Number two, you have to have access to a workforce that is skilled and really able to deliver a quarantine in a safe and effective way. That includes not just obviously infection control, but also looking after people's mental health, their well-being, making sure they're fed, etc. And then finally, you do need to be close to an acute care facility, because sadly, some of the people who get COVID, as you and I know, they will get sick, and we have to be able to care for anybody who comes into the country in a hospital which is of sufficient quality and close enough to those kinds of services. Now, if there are other proposals that deliver on those three criteria and are credible in terms of the services that they can deliver and don't take 2 years to build, well, I think people should consider those if they become available to be considered.
Acting Victorian Premier James Molino has said that it's crazy that Commonwealth authorities have allowed almost 14,000 Australians to leave the country multiple times during the pandemic. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, our border isn't completely shut, and that's for a reason.
Clearly not.
There have, There have been some circumstances where people have had to leave the country. That includes government ministers and people on extremely urgent business. So some of those people will be in that category. And I think that will continue really for the length of this pandemic.
And that number, you don't think it's too high? Obviously, you'd expect it for emergency situations, but it seems pretty high.
No, I don't actually think it is that high, Patricia. I mean, there are some skills that we need in the country that we don't have here. We do have some people who are doing very urgent business offshore. That includes some of our diplomats who've been coming in and going out, some of our ministers, some people in particularly high-skilled and rare occupations, and then, of course, in some nominated and very urgent family circumstances. So I do think that that's actually a very reasonable number under the circumstances. And frankly, if we shut ourselves off completely, we wouldn't actually be able to have important conversations with our allies or do some of the business we need to do. So no, I don't think that number is too high.
Okay, because the Home Affairs Minister, Karen Andrews, has said she's concerned by the figures, and we know the Morrison government is now meeting, its National Security Committee is meeting to consider tightening the exemption process. So you think further tightening it is unnecessary?
Well, I think at all times the exemption process should be managed carefully. And if on review it looks like that that hasn't been applied in the way that perhaps was intended, well, we need to know that, and we actually need to make sure that it is being applied in that way. But I think in terms of the aggregate number, it doesn't surprise me and it doesn't alarm me. Does that mean we shouldn't look to make sure it's appropriately targeted? Of course we should look. I mean, the notion that public policy and its application isn't reviewed on a regular basis isn't something that I would support. And I know that you would agree with me, Patricia. We do need to look at these things, how they work on implementation. So if a few more have been let out of the country than probably is consistent with the guidelines, we need to know that and we do need to fix it.
Jane, thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
That's the chair of the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness, Jane Holton. This is RN Drive. Our number 0418 226 576.